Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I'm awfully happy to be here today because I have something sort of fun and extremely relevant to talk about. And it's so interesting to me that those are brand new songs, and both of those, the fire, the inside I'm talking about today, and then that whole thing about recognizing it's right here, right now, right where I am. It is. So we have some extraordinary synchronicity going on. I feel like I'm a little loud. Is my mic a little hot? Okay. Oh, I'm hearing myself in the monitor. Okay. You're okay out there then? Because I might get excited. I'm just saying. So today, the title of my talk, in case you hadn't already figured out by looking around the room, the title of my talk is A Collection of Rocks. And I actually brought a collection of rocks. So if you don't have a rock close to you, but you see one nearby, scoot it near you, because you might want to be touching it while we're talking about it later, because we're going to seed some ideas this morning in knowing that right where you are, God is, that there is no place that God is not, and that there is a way that I'm not sure all religion appreciates, that there is value in loving the physical earth. You know, so often we are told to give up that which rusts and decays and make your gold and have some heavenly reward. And so I'm here to sort of reverse that and say that while we are here in physical form on this beautiful planet, that we can train ourselves to recognize the beauty, the order, the harmony, the peace that's already here in this universe. And as we practice recognizing it, we'll be more likely to see it in each other. We'll be more likely to recognize that whole idea of namaste, you know, the spirit in me honors the same in you. So the quote that I selected to inspire me turned out to be a real humdinger of a quote. It would not leave me alone all week. I liked it so well, I'm going to use it twice this morning because I think it'll help to revisit it later after we talk about it a little bit. So here's the quote, Ernest Holmes, in the Science of Mind textbook. The universe remains forever in perfect balance. Think about that for a minute. The universe itself remains always in perfect balance. No thought or creation of humankind can confuse the eternal heavens. Isn't that a good thing? Is that a really good thing? The perfect action of intelligence maintains its creation in peace and order and harmony, no matter what. The perfect intelligence that created all the gorgeous things we see and the way that we live, and certainly in an attempt for us to understand those divine qualities. So today we are going to use something physical. I'm going to be speaking about this collection of rocks that I dragged here to church. It's quite a story. I'm not going to tell you during the service. It might turn my mood a little foul because those rocks are heavy when you put them all together. I'm just going to stop right there and say that. But I had this vision that I think these rocks can teach us something. I think there's this brilliant intelligence imbued in absolutely everything. And I found lots of supporting quotes to back me up on that. It's not just me. So what I know is that we come to classes, we come to Sunday services, especially in New Thought. We come to better understand this spiritual universe that we live in. And we study this spiritual universe, and we study the physical form of life in order to better understand in a very mental way the universe of conscious thought. Now think about it, that you would not hear that outside of a New Thought church. We talk in such a funny language, but we are going to be talking today about this idea that there's this mental universe that we live in. We always say there is only one mind. It is the mind of God, and that mind is my mind now. It is also your mind now and always, just like the song. reported to us. And it is a universe of conscious thought. And so we're always talking about being a conscious, about waking up, being aware of the greater truths that are always right in front of us. So what that boils down to is we take our work, the things that happen, our experiences, the conditions in our life here in this physical world of tangible things, and we can learn greater spiritual truths, and we can actually learn to use divine law in our life. And so one of the great things we do is we talk about these universal spiritual laws that are always on point and how we can align our lives up to it, to all of that. So we're talking about learning to perceive life in a deeper way. So that might look like a rock to you right now. I'm hoping before you leave this morning, you see something more than just a rock sitting in a chair. We learn to perceive with greater depth. We have things to think about, to entertain in the mental realm, and to wake up our consciousness. And then there are things that we can actually touch and hold, and we can tie it all together, and we can learn some stuff here. Life and that intelligence that we're talking about, that intelligence that created all of life, it is at the heart of every living thing. That intelligence is at the heart of all of life itself in every living thing. So there's something divine about every leaf on a tree. There is something absolutely divine about our physical being, that we have organs that are pumping blood and breathing our lungs, and we have skin, and we have tissue, and we have muscles that help us do things, including our walking, so that there's something divine in every cell of our being that keeps all that stuff functioning. And there is something divine about every grain of sand. And yes, there's something divine about that rock that's not too far from you right now. There's a couple extra rocks right up here up front if anybody's feeling rock deprived. You might want to come get yourself a rock. So Ernest Holmes said, to really bring that home, Ernest Holmes said, in and through all, there is a law that functions at every level. In and through all, there is law that functions at every level. Everything in form points us back to it, to that great intelligence. And that's what I want to talk to you about this morning. And here's where the passionate part came in. I found this quote from Elizabeth Barrett Browning. She said, oh, this is so yummy. You're going to love this one, Jane. Earth is crammed with heaven, and every common bush is afire with God. Right? Right? Right out of your song. That's a gorgeous quote. So that's my goal. I want us to be aware of that fire. It's so wonderful when things come together musically along with the theme that I'm going to be speaking about. I want us to be conscious of that and to really be, she's probably going to sing the third song, will probably just knock us out of the park because it'll be so right on. That there is just this way, there is a fiery aliveness that is spirit. That is that God stuff that Cerise was so beautifully singing about. Aristotle, classical philosophy. Aristotle argued that all creation is imbued with inherent purpose. All creation is imbued with inherent purpose. So we didn't make that rock. What made that rock? You know, I mean, I often think I'd like to take one of those college classes and study, what would it be, physical geology or, you know. But those are hard classes. Those classes have, like, math and, you know, those aren't just fun studying what the special power of the rock is. Those are really, that's physical science. But there's a fiery aliveness in all of it. So if everything is imbued with a purpose, I was thinking, isn't that interesting? Because maybe that's why we as human beings are so insistent on attaching meaning to everything. We assign meaning to everything. It's sort of where we get into trouble in life because I think it means this and you think it means that. And then we can't agree on, sometimes even a conversation is difficult to have because we're all interpreting words in a slightly different way. And that's just the nature of life. But I think that as we assign meaning to these things of God, we are empowering them with even more meaning. So just randomly, what does a rock mean to you? What, there are symbols, you know, but what comes to your mind when I ask you what a rock means to you?
That's
solid,
strength.
Earth, strength,
foundation.
A Chevy truck. I just, what is it? Magic? Magic, a rock reminds, oh, that's interesting, okay. It's so solid, I'm having trouble going from all of that to magic. I just want to sing, we will rock you. So now we want to sing. So isn't that the clever way that life is? We bring meaning to things. Sometimes it feels rather abstract, and so I can't quite get it because that's so removed from the way I was thinking about it. And then we go full circle, and we end up with a song, and now we start to feel the fire of it as we throw our ideas together. So here's what I was thinking about. You know, we see, when we're attentive, we can see there is an inherent beauty in a rose. When we pay attention, if you're sitting at the side of the ocean and the waves are crashing in on the bluff and you're up at the top of the bluff, you can see or feel or perceive or know there's great power there at the ocean, right? If you are catching a glimpse of a bird that's just sort of gliding through the air, you get this feeling of freedom. Do you hear we're talking about God qualities? Can you see how there's this opportunity for us to recognize the divine in greater and greater ways, and that as we recognize a divine quality in something, a bird soaring through the sky, we ignite something within us, much the way we just played with a little bit of music and we laughed and we felt something inside of us that united us, that brought us together. You can see, don't puppies make you happy? I mean, as long as they're not mine, they make me happy. Don't think I want to do that again. But puppies make us happy. I notice that I keep a photograph of my son. Now, I have four children, but I only have one son. And so I have this picture in my office taped right in front of my printer, at the front of my printer. When I have to add paper, I pull him out. So it's a picture of my son as a toddler with a puppy on his lap. It was a crazy moment where we thought we could own a puppy, and we got a Basset Hound puppy. Her name was Princess Grace of Hughes. Oh, she was gorgeous. She was gorgeous. But woo, Basset Hound puppy. That was a difficult choice. Little did we know. But that picture reminds me of pure joy. So I got this son that I love, and he's just a toddler, and he's wearing these grubby clothes, you know, and he's got these sitting on the lawn, and he's got this puppy on his lap, and I keep that picture there to remind me to be happy, you know, to have that experience of joy. So we are always attaching meaning. Now, where we get in trouble is when we're attaching meaning that is the opposite of the God quality you desire to experience. And what I want to tell you is that there's nothing outside of us that makes us feel that way. It's something outside of you that can quicken that something that then stirs a reminder for you of that amazing holiness in all of life. So So I have an impressive rock collection. How many of you have a rock collection at home? See, a lot of us are drawn to rocks. Man, that's maybe close to half of us raised our hand. I have an impressive rock collection from all over the world. Every place I've gone, I bring back a little stone. And if it's just a little pebble from somewhere, I'll try and I used to put them in camera, empty camera, the little camera tubes from the 35-millimeter film, and I put a little note in there so I could remember where it was from. And that's how you do it when you go abroad. Now, when you drive somewhere in your car, like the beach, and you see a nice big rock you like, sometimes you think you can get it all the way back up the bluff into the car, and so you drag things home that maybe you shouldn't, but you just feel like you can't live without it, so you do. Then over years, you have this gorgeous rock collection in your backyard because you bring home two or three every time you go, and now suddenly you find out you're moving to Arizona, and you don't want to leave all your pretty rocks in California. So what do you do? Well, I was lucky to find a girlfriend who helped gather my rocks in the backyard that were all over the backyard, and she kept them for me for about a year until Hugh and I could drive out in the truck one day and pick up these loads of rocks, and then we moved them, and then we had to move them one more time. I usually do it by myself because I feel really bad about somebody else having to do that heavy lifting. But they have meaning to me. They matter to me because of the magnificent places I have borrowed them from. So sometimes, even though they're just rocks, sometimes I'll look at a rock and I will, for whatever reason, have a memory of exactly where I picked up that rock. How does that happen? Right? Something about that connects me, and I will remember climbing up that bluff, or I will remember that I found that rock in a cave in San Simeon. And so there's some kind of a relationship that begins to happen as we have this exchange of love with each other, even with a rock. Maybe you're having a little exchange right now with your rock. And so what I want to add now is that our memories bring meanings. You know, once you have that memory of place, because that's what happens for me, it's a memory, it's a recognition of a place, a time, perhaps a celebration, maybe a holiday or just a fabulous vacation, but it brings me now into relationship in a different way. Who or what am I having a relationship with? It's not really with the rock. Think about it. It's not with the rock. It's with that which has that fiery thing inside of you that has been stirred. So it's not even really the memory, but it is a relationship. So it's not a product. It's not a thing. It becomes alive. A relationship is alive. And we have relationships with all kinds of things. And this is where it becomes important to notice what meaning you are putting on things. Because if you don't like certain memories or certain ideas you have attached to things, it's never too late to change your mind. That is what this teaching is about. I was also thinking the way we get reconnected to life. If we have a positive memory and you start feeling that joy moving around with inside of you, do you know what's happening? You're reconnecting to that quality of God that is joy, and you are expressing it in that moment. You're having an experience of it. The same is true of peace or love or the way we like order and harmony in our lives. And so there's something important that happens in this idea of relationship, and when we move it to something bigger than a thing. What happens is if you recognize that joy, or if you recognize that beauty and the pattern in the stone, if you recognize some kind of energetic you feel when you're holding it, something is quickened inside of you that is purely divine. And the divine in that has connected with the divine in you, and it is a beautiful way for us to consciously recognize that reconnection, or an experience of wholeness or oneness, the way we unify in a moment with some aspect of God. We unify, that's having a moment of wholeness, and we are not separated from life. That's how we have holy moments. That's why it's so valuable for us to practice the art of namaste, to intend to see the divine in each other, because if I see it and it stirs something in me, it's likely it will awaken something in you that will respond to it in exactly the same energetic vibrational level. It is divine love. It is the law of correspondence, and we are participating. We are being conscious and in choosing. So a lot of us have interest in like power stones, the crystals and the healing rocks and healing crystals and all of those things. You probably know what your birthstone is. Just guessing, most of us know what. You don't know your birthstone? You know your birthstone. I'm trusting you know your birthstone. And a lot of us have studied the healing powers in stones. We know that amethyst is used for stress and for relaxation, and that rose quartz is about love, and clear quartz is for clarity and purification, and it goes on and on and on. It's way more complicated than all of that. But there is a reason, I think, for our interest in that. And you know what I think that reason is? I think this is just me talking. Or singing. We could sing again. I think the reason for it is that sometimes in living our life in human form, we feel vulnerable. We face illnesses. We face loss. We have physical challenges or financial challenges, challenges in the physical world. And I think when we feel vulnerable, we look for things to help us feel more confident again, to help us align ourselves to truth again. And so we start sort of in the magic. Like Jane said, there's something magical in it. There's just something magical in it. And so we start there. But here's what I want to remind you. You don't get the power from the stone. You got the power. You already have the power. And those who are sensitive to the energetic of the stone will then be awakened from the inside out, awakened to whatever that quality is that you're sensing. And then we, again, are reunited with that sense of wholeness. So it's not about reaching for something outside of you that's going to make you feel better. I think that sometimes we reach for those things because we feel frightened or we just want a little aid, and then we use that. But remember, you're attaching meaning. So be clear. Be clear that we don't do this for magic. You can. And I think sometimes magic is a nice word because we're talking about things that are difficult to describe. But let me remind you that spirituality is scientific. And so is the energetic in the stone. So hold a stone. See if there's a stone. Grab a rock. If there's a rock near you, grab the rock and just hold it for a minute. And just notice what the experience is like for you. You're starting a relationship. You're courting. Just hold it and think about what's it feel like? What's this experience of holding this rock? Look at the shape of it. Notice the color of it. Imagine, if you will, that I hand washed every rock in this sanctuary and I blessed it. Now what do you feel? Now pass a rock to somebody that hasn't held the rock yet. Give it away. Give it to somebody else. If there's somebody around you. Here, Mr. Bill, have a rock. Just feel the weight of it as you're holding it. Feel the weight of it. Notice that we understand why we think of solidness, of strength, of whatever it is that comes to your mind. And see if you can notice the energy in it. Not everybody can. You don't have to. It's not right or wrong. Some of us are more intuitive in that way. And examine it. You know, again, look at the color of it, the shape of it. See if you can feel a little bit of whoever held the rock before you in that rock. See how it's energized. And know that, remember that you're not getting something from the stone. You're sensing that there's something more that can't be seen, but that we can sense, that is there to teach us more about the divine. And so what stirs inside for you? Because what stirs for you, if it's glorious, you know it's a God quality. You know it's an attribute of the divine that's imbued in the stone, because it's imbued in absolutely everything. And it can awaken that same remembrance inside of us. The earth is crammed with heaven, right? Set ablaze. It is that God inside of it. And so the things that we pull from nature can enhance our awareness of that. That's what I want you to take away today. So a rose... Let's go back to the rose and the ocean and the bird and the sky. You know, I mean, a rose is beautiful, but is that beauty real if we don't notice it? And what I want to say to you is, if you walk by a rose bush and you don't, or a bouquet of roses, and you don't notice the beauty, then you've just missed it. If you notice it, and if you acknowledge that beauty, you enhance it, you grow the beauty, right? So there's a relationship in our noticing. Think about it. Just in noticing the rose, maybe you smell it. Something changes now. It stirs something inside of you. It awakens some remembrance, some ancient remembrance of truth that we call beauty. And what if the rose does need smellers? You know, what if it needs us to have that experience of beauty unfold on the planet? You know what I'm talking about. And the same is true of the ocean. You know, those waves are going to move. But what happens when we notice? We now are more deeply aware of the way that we are imbued with that power. Or if we look at the bird in flight, right? The bird doesn't care if anybody sees it or not. Bird would probably rather think it's not noticed. Which that double negative was almost a little confusing for me in that song. I'm just going to say, because I do double negatives way too much. So there's all of this life that's going on. And when we recognize it, we are recognizing God. Even in the stone. So now, let me take you back to that opening quote. The universe remains forever in perfect balance. No thought or creation of humankind can confuse the eternal heavens. The perfect action of intelligence maintains its creation in peace, order, and harmony. Something happens and a rock rolls down a hillside. God's got it. There is a natural balance and a perfect order always restoring itself in nature. The rock will roll somewhere and voila, suddenly you got the Grand Canyon. You know, what is that? How does that happen? So when I look at this this idea, Holmes is speaking of this perfect balance, and he says, no thought or creation of humankind can confuse any of that. I always think of that quote from This Thing Called You, the little book, This Thing Called You, where Holmes said, when it was thought that the world was flat still, thinking didn't flatten the world. Okay? Thinking, so I want you to really hear this, because there's a lot of grumbling in the world right now. A lot of people are sort of saying the world is flat right now. And I think there are a lot of us who know that just isn't true. We know that there is a natural order that is always restoring itself, and it may not happen in the time frame that we care about. But I notice sometimes I worry about all that grumbling, and I want to tell you that this is so reassuring to me. No thought, nothing humankind can think or do can confuse the eternal heavens. Right? So let's stand on that. That is a solid truth. And the only variance to that is when we forget and we get sucked into other people's stuff. So just as the rock doesn't really give you strength, that grumbling also does not give you the grumble unless you let it. And you get to choose. We are always choosing. Emerson said, all I have seen teaches me to trust the Creator for all that I have not seen. Right? All I have seen teaches me to trust the Creator in all that I have not seen. Found this fabulous quote from the Wisdom of White Eagle. Flowers do not force their way with great strife. Flowers open to perfection slowly in the sun. Don't be in a hurry about spiritual matters. Go step by step and be very sure. If you want to be able to see the world as sacred, just say, yes, you do. Yes, we want to be able to see the world as sacred and spiritual. All you have to do is look at a living tree. Just look at a tree, even out here in the desert. It's a living, breathing thing. It's stimulated by the sun. It's going to be watered soon by the rain when the monsoon does its work for us. It's rooted in the dirt of the earth, and so are we. We are rooted on this planet. And when we remember that, we can open slowly into full bloom in the sun. So look closely. Look closely at those rocks. Look closely at your own beliefs. Look closely at this thing we call the law that gives you that perfect pathway. You know, I have I keep thinking about the scripture in the Bible where it said, it's in the Gospels, if it was necessary for the advancement of wisdom on this planet, even the stones could call out. God could make the stones talk if it was necessary. And I want to say, I think the stones do talk to us. I think all of life is speaking. We have this ongoing conversation. When we develop that conversation into a relationship, now we have that fire. Now we can tap into the aliveness of that spirit. Now we can see the beauty in the rose, and we can feel that beauty. We can embody that feeling, because it's awakening something that is God-given within us, and we make that beauty more real on this planet. And the same is true of love, and the same is true of peace. None are lesser or more. And finally, I had this funny question that went through my mind. You'll also love this, Miss Jane. Must be front row, talks for you, huh? Why is it we are so impacted when we take a simple drive to Sedona? I don't know about you, but I don't even have to get out of the car. I feel something transformational happen to me when we just drive through there. Of course, then I want to get out of the car. Then I kind of ache to just get my feet just right in that red earth, right? So what is that? What is that? Here are some of the things that I was thinking about. Did God make Sedona more powerful than other places? Don't answer. Just ponder these questions with me. Did that infinite intelligence that created all of the universe make some places more special than other places? Is that possible? If so, why? And what else could be going on here that we have not noticed yet? And so what I think is that we have this God-given gift of appreciation. This is just my theory. I just made this up, you know. But we have this God-given gift of appreciation. We should use it. And there is no question that we live in probably the most beautiful state in all of the United States. It's stunning what kind of incredible things are within a couple hours' drive around here. And so what if, like the rose, when we smell the rose, when we acknowledge the beauty, we develop a relationship, we expand what's possible. Is it possible that we have added to that feeling, that energetic thing that we feel, that we think is outside of us? Is it possible we're wrong? Is it possible that our ability to appreciate it allows us to have just an expanded sense of the presence of God? Don't answer, just think. You know, I want to tell you that they say there's a way that we, over time, add energy and you can begin to feel it. When I walk in this sanctuary, and many of you have shared the same thing, you can feel something when you pass through that door right there. When you pass through that door and you come in this room, there's something that happens. I often pray in here when nobody's around. I'd like to walk around and pray out loud when you're not here. And there's just something that's so soothing for me. One day I was having a really hard time. I probably a health issue with my husband, I don't know. But I came in here and I laid down in that pew about four rows back. And I laid down and I took a nap in here in order to rejuvenate my body. And I woke up and it was like I was a different person. So what they say is the sages of all the ages, they say that when there's prayer in a sanctuary, prayer over decades or longer, that prayer, the energetics of the prayer permeate the walls and create something that, yes, you can feel when you walk in. So, is it possible that our deep appreciation for beauty enhances it and expands it? You know, they say the same thing about the Bible. The reason the Bible or another sacred text has power in it is because we have given it power. We set our intention to have a sacred experience. And maybe not all of us in here, because I know we're not all fans of the Bible, but I, for one, have had amazing experiences with that expectation. So I'm going to tell you this little story I stumbled on. I'm teaching Emma in the evenings. I'm not teaching. We're all having a little book study together. And in my preparation, I found this article that I did not remember having. It was in my computer. I saved it from the, I don't even know where, minister's listserv or somewhere. And it said in that article that at the end of Emma Curtis Hopkins' life, Ernest Holmes studied with her. In fact, he was the last known student that ever studied with her. That towards the end of her life, in fact, the last 20 years or so, she took a room in New York in the Iroquois Hotel, and that's where she saw clients. But she also bought a farm outside of Kent, Connecticut, and she called it the Joy Farm. She gave it a name. This is the Joy Farm. And she went to her farm for R&R to get out of the city, and she called it her little special retreat, and she also loved the company of her close friends, so she would invite her friends. In time, her friends would invite their friends, and they all had this retreat-like experience. Well, one day, I'm not sure Emma was still living when this happened or not, but one day, one of the friends, a woman, said, "You know, I always feel so good at the farm. I think I have an addiction to alcohol, and I think I'd like to get sober. Would it be okay if I came to the farm and spent 2 weeks getting sober at the farm? Because the environment there is so fantastic, I think it will really support this choice that I'm making right now." And so Emma or Emma's sister Estelle said, "Of course, that's what we're here for. You know, you get to do whatever you want." The woman came and she had such an extraordinary experience in becoming sober, and that it was so perfect. The environment was just so, it fed her so well that she went and started talking to her other friends who also desired to have an experience of not drinking anymore. And then they would go to the farm, and they began then having this reputation for helping people get sober. Guess who was there in the 1950s? Bill and his wife, Lois Wilson, went to retreat. Now, I don't know that he was probably sober already, I don't know. But Bill W. took his wife, and they went there for retreat because they had heard such extraordinary stories of how powerful it was to be on the farm. And Emma Curtis had died. She died in 1925. She then had her sister Estelle inherited all her property and the rights of her material, all her printed materials. And Estelle was so taken by Bill W.'s response to the farm that she gave him the farm. She signed over the deed. And he changed the name of the farm in honor of Emma Curtis Hopkins to the High Watch Farm. That property continues today to be a residential treatment center that's well appreciated. And every now and then I would hear people talk about the High Watch Farm, and people would ask me, is that connected to Emma? So sort of indirectly, but it was the farm that she purchased and called the Joy Farm in the beginning. Now, Bill W. kept respected her memory by bringing in for a while teachers from the outside that could teach the 12 lessons from Emma Curtis Hopkins. And then that eventually faded away. But there you have a story, and there's actually a picture of Bill and Lois in the article, which I didn't know. I thought it was a secret. I didn't know anybody knew what he looked like. So there you go. Something in a place was given respect, was appreciated with great reverence, and it became something important over time. Life is holy, my friends. Life is sacred. Let us never forget that. We sit here as a spiritual community, and so, you know, what does that mean to us? And I would tell you that it means to me that we are a beloved community. It means to me that we have found a place to come and to be respected and to name things in our life as good, to practice the law, to learn how to use principle. We understand that we are brave, we are courageous individuals that will not be batted around by life, but we will stand in truth. We will live prosperous lives. We will take a stand for well-being and for love and for peace. For we know that in which we stand is holy. So I'd like to anchor these great, great ideas in the words of prayer. If you are a practitioner, a minister, please stand and surround the room. Hold a rock if you desire. And let us turn within. Just take a breath. And we allow ourselves to know that right where we are, God is. And that in this perfect holy moment, we pull our full attention inward to recognize that there is an activity of life. It is the pure love of God. And it abides within us at all times. I feel the love of God. And I know it is that within me that awakens, that becomes increasingly aware of this movement of the desires of our hearts, of our willingness to be conscious. And so we stand mentally alert and we open ourselves to be vessels to receive the good things of Spirit. I know that there is only that one mind. It is the infinite intelligence of all the universe, and it is indeed that wisdom that allows our physical being to function on this planet. It is the very way we know that there is the movement of a face of a flower that follows the light of the day. It is that way in which we see that the birds naturally find a flow in a current that we cannot see with our eyes, and yet the bird can sense. And that bird finds perfect alignment, that it is carried as though it is just floating in the air. And yet we use that word to soar. And so now, even now, we soar, we rise above the conditions of the world so that we can see that which is perfect and whole and complete already, that we can turn within and we know that there is that wisdom in every molecule of our being that heals, that restores us to wholeness, that brings love and compassion to our relationships with other people. I feel the love of God, and I know that we, in this memory, in this experience of being one with it, that we become it. And so that vibrational movement of the inner and the outer and the exchange and the thoughts and the ideas and the way that we name things becomes so valuable to us. And so in this moment, as we know these powerful words of prayer have this healing balm, this salve that brings us to our senses again, that allows us to find our way in a challenging world, we know that the perfection of Spirit itself is revealing itself on this planet through us. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, Infinite Spirit, for allowing us this gift of beauty, of perceiving that which is infinite, and of using our rational minds to practice principle so that we do indeed become a part of making this world a better place. And in that spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply release the words of this prayer into the divine law, knowing it is already done. And together we say, and so it is.